Infantry Attacks is no ordinary military memoir. Written by a young officer who would later become one of history's most controversial generals, this book has quietly influenced military doctrine for nearly a century. When a young West Point graduate named George S. Patton first encountered it in the 1930s, he reportedly stayed up all night devouring its tactical insights. Adolf Hitler was so impressed that he personally promoted its author to command the legendary Africa Corps. Winston Churchill kept a copy on his nightstand, studying the mind of the man he called a very daring and skillful opponent. Before Rommel became the Desert Fox, before his tanks raced across North Africa, he was an infantry officer whose tactical brilliance was forged in the muddy trenches and mountain passes of the First World War. His extraordinary story of leadership under fire offers timeless lessons on battlefield initiative, small unit tactics, and the human elements of warfare. The summer of 1914 found Lieutenant Erwin Rommel riding with the 4th Battery of the 49th Field Artillery Regiment through the streets of Ulm, Germany. War rumors swirled through the ancient imperial city as crowds gathered around bulletin boards and newspaper extras circulated rapidly. Die Wacht am Rhein echoed through narrow streets as citizens sensed the approaching conflict. Feeling the gravity of the moment, Rommel obtained relief from his artillery assignment to rejoin his infantry regiment. By August 1, the regimental barracks in Weingarten buzzed with activity as soldiers tried on field equipment. Rommel greeted the men of the 7th Company, whom he would soon lead into battle. Their young faces radiated anticipation, a sight that moved him deeply. "Is there anything finer," he would later write, "than marching against an enemy at the head of such soldiers?" The following days brought intensive training that welded the War Strength Company together. They practiced combat exercises with heavy emphasis on entrenchment, skills that would soon prove vital. By August 18, they began their northward advance, crossing the German-Luxembourg frontier singing gaily. The local population initially welcomed them with fruit and drinks, though this warmth noticeably cooled as they pushed into Belgium. Rommel's first taste of combat came at Blyde on August 22, 1914. In the pre-dawn fog, his platoon exchanged fire with unseen French soldiers. When visibility improved, he led a small team toward a farm building, discovering 15 to 20 Frenchmen drinking coffee in the road, completely unaware of the Germans' presence. Rather than fetching his platoon, Rommel and three men opened fire from 20 yards, killing several instantly while others took cover. In the ensuing close-quarters firefight, he exchanged shots with a Frenchman just 20 yards away, finally hitting him after a tense exchange. The village fight escalated as they stormed buildings, using timber as battering rams and straw bundles to smoke out defenders. The French either surrendered or retreated westward into the fog. As the sun burned off the mist, Rommel assembled about 100 men and moved northeast out of the burning village. From a ridge position, they spotted French infantry in distinctive red breeches dug in across a draw. After deploying with precision and opening fire, they advanced by groups as practiced in peacetime, eventually forcing the enemy to abandon their position. This baptism of fire cost the regiment dearly. 25% of officers and 15% of men were casualties. Yet Rommel had demonstrated the aggressive leadership style that would become his hallmark. He showed no hesitation in personally leading small units into danger, maintaining tactical momentum, and exploiting enemy weaknesses through maneuver rather than frontal assault. The war's early mobile phase soon gave way to the grim reality of trench warfare, but before the Western Front fully stabilized, Rommel experienced the unique challenges of forest combat. After crossing the Meuse on August 30-31, his battalion advanced toward Mont de Vansasse as the advance guard. At Mont's southwest entrance, they encountered heavy fire from commanding heights. Confusion erupted when their own artillery mistakenly fired on their position based on outdated cavalry reconnaissance reports, an early lesson in the deadly consequences of poor communication. In the dense Duelkahn woods, Rommel led his platoon as advance guard toward enemy positions. They engaged in fierce combat through thick underbrush, with bullets whizzing past and ricochets causing injuries. When they encountered a French battery, Rommel attempted to attack with just 12 men, but came under friendly fire from German troops who mistook them for French soldiers. These early Forrest engagements taught Rommel valuable lessons he would apply throughout his career. Forrest fighting proved exceptionally difficult. Poor visibility, ricochets, difficult communication, and challenges maintaining direction and contact all complicated tactical control. Modern combat, he realized, required increased dispersion, immediate entrenchment, and thorough reconnaissance to prevent friendly fire incidents and unnecessary casualties. By early September, Rommel's unit participated in attacks near Gesnes and Defuy Woods. During one engagement, French artillery targeted German reserve companies bunched in the open, causing heavy casualties. A single shell wiped out two entire squads. This harsh lesson in dispersion and concealment would influence Rommel's future approach to deploying forces. When ordered to establish defensive positions along an exposed ridge, Rommel recognized their vulnerability to artillery. He impressed upon his company commanders the vital necessity of digging deep trenches before daybreak. The entire battalion labored through the night with picks and short spades against rock-hard ground. Though their trenches were initially inadequate, by afternoon of the following day, their 70-inch deep positions with foxholes dug into the front walls provided sufficient protection against intense bombardment. The 124th Regiment will die in its positions, their colonel had ordered when adjacent units withdrew. This grim determination, combined with Rommel's insistence on proper field fortifications, allowed them to hold despite devastating artillery fire. An early demonstration of his emphasis on preparation and positional discipline that would later characterize his desert defenses at Gazala and El Alamein. By January 1915, Rommel had rejoined his regiment in the Western Argonne after recovering from his first wound. Taking command of the 9th Company, he found poorly developed positions, trenches only 3 feet deep in places, dugouts with inadequate roofing, and no barbed wire obstacles. Despite lacking basic materials, boards, nails, wire, tools, he immediately ordered improvements, particularly strengthening dugout roofs and felling dangerous oak trees that deflected shell fragments into their trenches. On January 29, Rommel's company participated in a divisional attack following the detonation of a French mineshaft. Initially ordered only to cut off enemy escape routes, he seized an opportunity when the battalion adjutant asked if they wanted to join the main assault. Moving carefully through communication trenches to avoid enemy observation, they assembled 100 yards ahead of their position before advancing. When the attack signal sounded, they charged forward, pursuing fleeing French soldiers through 3 defensive lines without suffering casualties. They advanced half a mile, reaching the edge of woods west of Fontaine-aux-Charmes, where they encountered a massive wire entanglement 100 yards wide, stretching as far as they could see. Despite intense fire, Rommel led the company through the obstacle to occupy the formidable central position with its blockhouses and extensive defenses. This successful penetration established a foothold at Central that included 4 blockhouses arranged in a semicircle. However, as time passed without reinforcements arriving, they spotted more French troops retreating through nearby wire. Rommel ordered immediate fire, triggering a bitter struggle. Most of the enemy force, about a battalion, moved westward through wire entanglements 350 yards away before advancing toward them from the west. Soon they were encircled, with only a narrow path through the wire connecting them to their battalion, and even that lifeline was swept by enemy fire. With ammunition running critically low and the French seizing their rightmost blockhouse, the situation became desperate. A runner delivered the battalion's order. Battalion is in position half a mile to the north and is digging in. Rommel's company to withdraw, support not possible. Facing impossible choices, either retreat through the narrow wire passage under heavy crossfire with likely 50% casualties, or surrender after exhausting ammunition, Rommel chose a third option, attack the enemy to disorganize them, then withdraw. Though outnumbered, he knew French infantry had never withstood his riflemen's attack. The reserve platoon drove to the right, recaptured the lost blockhouse, and carried the whole line forward. As the enemy broke and ran westward, they seized the moment to hurry eastward through the wire entanglement in single file, suffering only light casualties before reaching the battalion position safely. This action, which earned Rommel the Iron Cross First Class, demonstrated his developing approach to tactical problems. Using surprise, maneuver, and aggressive action rather than passively accepting unfavorable circumstances. These infiltration tactics would later be formalized in German doctrine and would influence his approach to mobile warfare in the Second World War. In October 1915, Rommel joined the newly activated Württemberg Mountain Battalion under Major Sprosser, commanding the 3rd Company of 200 young veterans from various service branches. Despite their mixed uniforms, morale was high as they underwent rigorous training. By November's end, they passed final inspection and moved to Arlberg for ski training in December. Quartered at St. Christopher Hospice near Arlberg Pass, they practiced skiing from dawn until dark, then spent evenings listening to mountain songs played by their company band. These off-duty gatherings strengthened Rommel's bonds with his men. They enjoyed Austrian rations, including cigarettes and wine, and celebrated Christmas in high spirits before being deployed to the South Hilson Ridge sector. Their 10,000-yard sector had 500 feet of elevation change and was protected by strong wire entanglements, including an electrified one. Unable to garrison the entire line continuously, they developed strong points organized for all-around defense with ample supplies. Drawing on his Argonne experience, Rommel ensured each dugout had 2 exits and strong overhead cover. In October 1916, despite his Argonne experience showing such operations were dangerous, Rommel planned a raid to capture French prisoners. After careful reconnaissance with his sergeants, they identified French sentry positions and planned their approach through wire defenses. On October 4, under cover of stormy weather with heavy rain, he led 3 detachments toward the enemy 3 hours before midnight. Working methodically in pitch darkness, they cut through the 1st and 2nd wire belts, wrapping rags around wires before cutting to minimize noise. By midnight, they reached the final obstacle, heavy chevaux de frise too sturdy for their cutters. Finding a shell crater underneath, they squeezed through just as a French patrol approached. Rather than risk a firefight that would alert the entire garrison, they lay motionless as the patrol passed. After the patrol departed, they split into 2 teams to attack different sentry posts. When the French detected them, they launched hand grenades, forcing the Germans to charge immediately. They overwhelmed the sentries and captured 7 Frenchmen hiding in a dugout, while Lieutenant Schaffert's team captured 2 more prisoners. With 11 prisoners in hand and their wire-cutting teams having cleared escape routes, they withdrew successfully without casualties. This successful raid exemplified Rommel's meticulous planning, personal leadership, and tactical flexibility, qualities that would later distinguish his desert campaigns. His willingness to personally lead dangerous missions earned him the respect of his men and contributed to the exceptional unit cohesion that characterized his commands throughout his career. By August 1916, the Central Powers faced attacks on all fronts: the Somme, Verdun, the Russian front, Macedonia, and the Italian front. When Romania entered the war, crossing into Transylvania with 500,000 soldiers, Rommel's Mountain Battalion was dispatched to this new theater. Their first assignment was to occupy Hill 1794, 5,920 feet, in late October. They began climbing in increasingly heavy rain that turned to a cloudburst as night fell. Forced to bivouac at 4,950 feet, completely soaked, they couldn't light fires with the wet pine branches and spent a miserable night shivering in the freezing wind. At dawn, they reached the snow-covered summit to find only a telephone squad in a small hole and some shivering horses. A blizzard enveloped them, and despite Captain Gosler's pleas to withdraw, Sector Command threatened court-martial if they yielded ground. By morning, 40 men required evacuation for frostbite and cold-related illness. Only when 90% of their men were under medical treatment were they finally relieved by fresh troops with proper equipment. This harsh introduction to mountain warfare under winter conditions taught Rommel the importance of proper equipment and realistic operational planning, lessons he would later apply when considering the logistical requirements of desert warfare. In November, while Romanian forces concentrated north of Ploiești, expecting a German thrust from Kronstadt toward Bucharest, General Cune formed a new attack group in the Vulcan-Skurduk area to enter Wallachia and advance on Bucharest from the west. Rommel's battalion was tasked with seizing heights to protect the main force's mountain exit. On November 11, Rommel's company was ordered to take the village of Vallari. After establishing a defensive position overnight, they advanced into Kerpenuovallari at dawn, finding only civilians. When strong Romanian forces were spotted approaching from multiple directions, Rommel moved the company south along the Kerpenuov Brook, but their advance guard collided with a Romanian column 10 times their size. Despite being vastly outnumbered, Rommel's forces held their ground. The Romanians attacked repeatedly despite heavy losses, but eventually withdrew under well-aimed German fire. By nightfall, they retreated, leaving hundreds of dead, including a divisional commander. This battle opened the road into Wallachia, demonstrating the critical importance of combat reconnaissance, establishing contact with neighboring units, and the effectiveness of rapid rifle fire against superior numbers. The summer of 1917 found Rommel's mountain battalion engaged in fierce fighting for Mount Cosna on the Romanian front. On August 10th, after a successful operation the previous day, Rommel was tasked with seizing the fork in the road west of Hill 674 despite being wounded in the arm. Given command of 5 companies, he personally positioned 10 heavy machine guns in concealed locations, assigning specific targets and fire schedules. At noon, all guns opened fire, while a platoon created a diversion with shouting and grenades. The assault team covered the ground to the oak woods amid deafening noise, quickly clearing enemy trenches. After securing the woods, they pushed toward Hill 674, though Rommel was wounded again by Romanians firing from behind. Despite severe pain and blood loss, he maintained command, capturing the hill and organizing its defense against approaching enemy columns. The next day, despite his wound, Rommel led 6 companies in an attack against Mount Cosna. Moving stealthily through dense forest, they managed to slip between enemy sentries who were talking and coughing, completely unaware of the German presence. They navigated a deep ravine and climbed the steep slope in blazing August heat, with machine gunners carrying loads of nearly 110 pounds. Without artillery support due to cut communication lines, Rommel ordered a precise attack sequence. Silent approach through the ferns, followed by 30 seconds of machine gun fire, then a silent breakthrough without shouting. The assault worked perfectly, with mountain troops breaking into the hostile position with minimal losses. As they advanced, they encountered fierce resistance from a wooded hill across open ground. The enemy counterattacked with artillery support, targeting their left flank. In this desperate situation, Rommel committed his last reserves in a surprise flanking maneuver. Just as they turned eastward, Jung's group appeared on their right rear, catching the enemy between 2 forces. The Romanians hastily abandoned the height, leaving most of their machine guns behind. After briefly losing the position to Romanian counterattacks, Rommel recaptured Mount Cosna on August 19th through a carefully coordinated assault. Leading the 1st Company personally, he directed them through dense fog up the steep northern slope while maintaining telephone contact with artillery. When they encountered enemy trenches, he ordered an immediate assault without waiting for the barrage to lift. They overran the surprise defenders, capturing the northern summit by 0630. By 0700, they had completely recaptured Mount Cosna, taking numerous prisoners and capturing 10 machine guns. The battle for Mount Cosna demonstrated Rommel's exceptional tactical skill, personal courage, and ability to inspire troops under the most challenging conditions. His success in both offensive and defensive operations against superior numbers proved the value of aggressive leadership, tactical flexibility, and maintaining fighting spirit even under the most challenging conditions. In October 1917, Rommel's Württemberg Mountain Battalion joined the newly created 14th Army for an offensive against Italian positions along the Isonzo River. After several days of stealthy preparation under the glare of Italian searchlights and intermittent artillery fire, they launched their attack on October 24th. Rommel's 1,000-yard column advanced through pouring rain, moving stealthily from bush to bush and climbing through concealed hollows. They seized one position after another, usually from the rear, as defenders either surrendered or fled downhill. They avoided firing on fleeing Italians to prevent alerting higher garrisons. By noon, they had reached the ridge extending east from Hevnik Peak, capturing impressive booty, including a 210mm battery whose gassed crew had vanished, leaving mountains of shells and undamaged dugouts. The following day, Rommel led the 2nd Rifle and 1st Machine Gun Companies from Hill 1066's rocky summit down a steep, narrow draw to the northwest. Despite taking machine gun fire and casualties, they reached their initial objective where the 3rd Company joined them. Moving cautiously from bush to bush across the slopes, they remained undetected by Italian sentries above. About an hour after leaving Hill 1066, they'd covered 2,200 air yards without drawing fire. Rommel's men silently captured an Italian outpost of 40 men and 2 machine guns without a shot being fired. This eliminated the main security element for the Kolovrat position, greatly improving their chances. Minutes later, Lieutenant Stryker reported, "Scout squad broke through, took guns and prisoners." They rushed forward, capturing heavy artillery batteries and dozens of Italian prisoners who were caught completely by surprise during their morning routines. By 09:15, the Rommel detachment had secured a half-mile breach in the Kolovrat position at Hill 1192. From this vantage point, Rommel observed Italian forces massing on Mount Cook to the west and reinforcements arriving from multiple directions. Rather than waiting for their attack, he prepared a counteroffensive once Major Sprosser arrived with reinforcements. After coordinating artillery support and positioning machine guns for fire support, he launched assault teams to probe the enemy defenses. When the southern assault team made excellent progress, Rommel led 4 companies down the camouflaged ridge road toward Ravna. They moved with extraordinary speed, capturing bewildered Italians who never had time to resist. The next day, Rommel continued his advance toward Mount Kreganza. Despite facing heavy enemy fire from commanding positions, he outmaneuvered the Italians by gathering assault teams from the front line and leading them downslope behind the Italian position. Looking down into their trench, they caught them completely by surprise and demanded surrender. Not only did the immediate garrison surrender, but to their astonishment, the entire Italian regiment, 37 officers and 1,000 men, laid down their arms. Without pausing, Rommel continued toward Mount Matajor with just 100 riflemen and 6 machine gun crews. When they encountered the 2nd Regiment of the Salerno Brigade, he outmaneuvered them by swinging southwest, then attacking from an unexpected direction. Soon, this regiment also surrendered, 1,200 men and 35 officers. Still pressing onward toward Matajor's summit, they surprised an Italian company on the east ridge, then approached the peak itself. Before they could open fire, the 120-man garrison surrendered. In just 52 hours since the offensive began, Rommel's small detachment had defeated 5 fresh Italian regiments, capturing 150 officers, 9,000 men, and 81 guns. This remarkable achievement earned him Prussia's highest military decoration, the Pour le Mérite. Following their breakthrough at Tolmaine and the capture of Mount Matajur, Rommel's battalion began pursuing retreating Italian forces across northern Italy. After several days of relentless marching through difficult terrain, they reached Cimalise on November 7, where they prepared to attack enemy positions blocking the way to the Piave Valley. After a successful attack west of Cimalise, Rommel sent every available man in immediate pursuit of the fleeing Italians. racing on horseback and bicycles, they quickly caught up with the enemy near St. Martino. The Italians surrendered without resistance as the Germans galloped through Erto, their detachment stretched over several miles in an improvised pursuit force. Ahead lay the formidable Vajont Ravine, a 2-mile-long gorge with vertical walls 400 to 600 feet high, crossed by a bridge 500 feet above a mountain stream. The road, carved into the rock face with several tunnels, could easily have been defended or demolished, but they pressed forward before the enemy could organize resistance. As they approached the ravine, their cyclists gained an advantage on the downgrade and overtook more Italians. Suddenly, a terrific explosion ahead revealed the enemy had blown up a bridge spanning a lateral gulch. They climbed across the chasm and raced to the main Vajont bridge where their cyclists were engaged with an Italian demolition crew. Facing another bridge rigged for demolition, Ramo ordered Sergeant Bruckner to run across and cut all wires while they followed to remove the fuses, thus saving this critical crossing. Racing through several tunnels, they finally reached the ravine outlet overlooking the Piave Valley and the town of Longarone. After several skirmishes and a night battle, the Italians launched a major attack at 0300 with artillery support, subjecting the Germans to intense bombardment. Their infantry assaults at various points led to hand-to-hand combat, but Rommel's strengthened positions held without needing reserves. The next morning, as they approached Longarone under machine gun cover, Lieutenant Schaffel appeared on muleback with hundreds of handkerchief-waving Italians behind him. Schaffel, who had been captured the night before, brought the Italian commander's written capitulation. The streets of Longarone were lined with cheering Italians shouting "Evviva Germania" as they entered. In total, over 10,000 men, an entire Italian division, surrendered. Their booty included 200 machine guns, 18 mountain cannon, 2 semi-automatic cannon, more than 600 pack animals, 250 loaded vehicles, 10 trucks, and 2 ambulances. The Rommel detachment's total losses in the fighting amounted to only 6 dead, 2 severely wounded, 19 slightly wounded, and 1 missing. This remarkable pursuit demonstrated Rommel's understanding of the psychological impact of relentless pressure on retreating forces. By maintaining momentum and boldly pressing forward, despite being vastly outnumbered, he prevented the Italians from establishing effective defensive positions. This approach would later become his trademark in the North African desert, where his rapid exploitation of breakthrough opportunities would earn him the nickname Desert Fox. Rommel's First World War experiences shaped his approach to warfare in profound ways. The lessons he drew from these campaigns, the importance of personal reconnaissance, the value of surprise and deception, the need to maintain momentum, and the decisive impact of attacking from unexpected directions would all become hallmarks of his later desert campaigns. Perhaps most significant was his understanding of the human dimension of combat. He recognized that soldiers pushed beyond normal endurance could achieve extraordinary results when well led, and that enemy forces often collapsed not from physical destruction but from psychological dislocation. His ability to sense the critical moment when an enemy's will to resist was breaking allowed him to achieve results far beyond what his limited resources might suggest possible. The final operations around Mount Grappa in late 1917 brought Rommel's mountain warfare experiences to a close. After Christmas in villages north of Feltre, his detachment relieved Prussian infantry in the Pologne sector, with their left flank on Mount Tomba. Positions were merely small depressions on steep, bare slopes covered in snow. Soldiers had to remain concealed in tents during daylight, with provisions arriving only at night. On January 1, 1918, during their final night in the advanced positions, Sergeant Moorlock and Private Scheidel fell while defending against a raiding party when their frozen machine gun jammed. Shortly before midnight, the Rommel detachment arrived at Alano with the 2 victims, then moved silently up the Piave. A week later, Rommel traveled home with Major Sprosser on leave, from which he would not return to the mountain troops, being attached instead to a higher headquarters. With heavy heart, he followed his comrades' subsequent battles in France. battles that decimated the ranks of the victors of Mount Kasna, Kolovrat, Matachor, Chimalays, and Longaron, with only a few surviving to see their homeland again. Infantry attack stands as both a tactical manual and a human document, a testament to the courage, endurance, and leadership that defined Rommel's military career. The lessons he learned in the mud and mountains of the First World War would later be applied in the sand and heat of North Africa, where his name would become legend. But perhaps the most enduring lesson from this remarkable book is that warfare, for all its technological evolution, remains fundamentally a human endeavor, one where initiative, courage, and leadership continue to determine the outcome of battles.